This is a Boardwalk Audio podcast.
We got your favorite sports and we got your favorite team.
Big Red,
go Cats.
Big Red,
go Cats.
Way out in California, but we represent the scene.
Big Red,
go Cats.
Big Red,
go Cats.
Pat, Joe, and Tweety are here to make some noise. We got a podcast. We're based at Galleon and Boyd. Big Red,
go Cats.
Big Red,
go Cats.
Big Red,
go Cats.
Yeah.
Big Red,
go.
Welcome to the Big Red Copcast. I'm Pat.
I'm Joe.
And again, no Tweety.
That's right. Hopefully for the last time in a row, at least. We know he'll be gone again at some point. But I thought This was our last one without him.
Is this the third one we've done without him?
I thought it was the fourth.
I'm pretty sure it's only three. I couldn't remember whether it was two or three.
I think this is our fourth one, Pat.
Well, maybe
it's
that's my
easy
fault,
to figure it out.
Maybe that's my fault that I didn't follow up too closely this week. I just assumed we were without him.
Oh, I think we are without him, but I thought it was four in a row.
Because I think he's still in Texas.
Oh, he is in Texas. If you check out his Instagram.
Oh, my God.
He's wearing his cowboy boots. And what did he say? The transformation is beginning. Let me say the transformation of Ryan to a Texan began the second he moved to Los Angeles.
Yeah, I would argue, I say this with love because I've known him for almost 20 years now.
Sure.
And wherever he is just kind of naturally tuned toward being like the antithesis of that place.
Yes, he'll become much more Californian as he lives in Texas.
Unless he hears us say this, in which case he might be stubborn and go against that.
Bit of a contrarian, that guy.
Yeah.
A contrarian. And so if you point something out to him, he's pretty sure that I'm pretty sure that he's going to go the other way if you give him an idea. I'm just looking at our episodes. If you're not with us, you're against us. That was just you and me, wasn't it?
No, that was Tweety's big rant. That was his whole thing.
Right. The Super Bowl party was you and I.
Yeah.
And then Scott Frost hired analysts. Was Tweety in that one?
He did do that one.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, yeah. Then because then it's Tweety's moving to Texas. Listen up, NCAA. And now this.
Well, you're right.
Because I'm pretty sure he was super excited about the analysts. What's that?
Yes, he was. So is he back next week?
I don't know. We'll need to ask.
He never come back.
As I was telling you, I worked an insane amount of hours this week. So I wasn't sending a lot of texts to follow up and check. And because
well,
our text
no
chains
hours,
go forever. Hardly.
Yes.
What's that?
Well, they do, especially if my brother gets in on one. Because he and Ryan will go back and forth for about 75 texts. And then I will throw one in. Usually around that time, someone will be like, where's Pat? And so you get 135 texts. I feel good to say only one or two are mine. And then you'll be like, oh, sorry, I missed this. I'm not going to scroll back and look at it.
Well, I just at one point had to mute that text chain because my wife was going to murder me. One time we were driving down to San Diego and she's like, what the fuck
is happening?
Yeah.
Cause she had my phone as the GPS and she's like, I'm going to throw this fucker out the window. I don't care if we get there.
Yeah. Yeah. She and Molly should have a talk because they have a similar reaction to the Cobcast.
I get a strong sense there is there's a strong connection in a lot of ways there.
Yes.
By the way, Molly almost became a random like gift from my wife to my sister-in-law, who is a nurse during the time of COVID. She was going to get her an Elizabeth Warren thing.
Oh, sure. She should have. I think there was a, Molly runs specials every once in a while. So telling the Cobcast, that she's gotten a few you know, the Cobcast fan base is actually, I think, fairly diverse for a Nebraska.
Oh, absolutely.
For
the
Nebraska,
spectrum is wide.
I think it is. And maybe it is generally, like, I look at the Rivals board and I know that's got a wide range of opinions as well.
But I also don't think, I mean, we're not like a Clay Travis.
Oh, God, no.
Has a very narrow audience.
Yes, yes.
Exactly. Which
a huge audience
is bigger than ours. Yes.
Yes. Narrow, but he's got all of them. That's the thing. You know, you just, if you can appeal to a very fanatic, that's what the Cobcast is. We look for Nebraska fans who are very fanatic. Now, sometimes some get turned off by us, but although we only really have a appeal to what, 3-4 million people, perhaps?
Yeah. I wonder what the official, like, what,
what's the population in Nebraska? About 2.5 million?
2 million.
Okay.
And
then you
figure there's a lot of expats.
Exactly. And I feel like expats are almost bigger Nebraska fans than people in the state, just maybe out of being an expat. So let's put that number at 3 million.
Yeah.
It's really incredible how well Nebraska does in any kind of social media contest when you consider stuff like that.
Well, it's because, like, when it comes to, like, the ratio of people in a state or people from a state to, like, people who support that particular team, it's nuts. Like, there's,
yes, and you can't compare Mississippi, Alabama. They all have at least another school to siphon some of that fan base out of.
And I honestly think even if you combined Mississippi and Mississippi State, for example,
right. Yeah,
their percentage would still not be as high as Nebraska's.
No. Now, Alabama, Auburn, you might get. Although there might be people in that state who root for another team besides those two out of spite.
But I also think, though, too, there are probably, like, some UAB fans who are also, like, Alabama fans, a la Nebraska.
Yes. Creighton. Oh, we could talk about Creighton a little bit later on, but that's a story for another day.
Well,
or maybe it is a story for today, but that could signal the turning of the tide in Nebraska dominance for basketball.
Do you think
he's fired?
Do you think they're setting the table for him being fired?
I think he's going to resign at the end of the season, but it'll be a pushed out the door situation.
That's...
If he had used that word once, and even stopped himself the second time that he was saying it. But if I were to say that word out loud in a room like that.
You mean plantation.
Exactly. I wouldn't. Yeah. Plantation. I said in my other podcast a bunch of times, but the word itself is not clear. Bad. Yes.
I just wanted to make it clear that it
was. Well, yeah.
Like,
and if you're someone who doesn't know,
it wasn't the end box.
Oh God, no. But my point is, like, other than the town in Florida, that word hasn't really had any relevance in this country for unless it was used in that context for about 150 years. You know what I mean? The plantation economy went away, you know, before the turn of the 20th century.
It's just such a random pull. Like,
yes. And then to do it twice, he could have said, we don't leave this room. We don't leave this box. We don't leave this school. We don't leave this team. We don't leave this state. We don't leave this arena. We don't leave this, like, generic place. The one thing other than jail, if he had said jail, that's the only word that would have been worse, I think.
I'm trying to think, like, we're not a cell that breaks apart and forms new cells. I don't know. Like,
anything.
Maybe
just, like, guys, stick together. How much more do you have to say than that?
Yeah.
All in.
Well, he's clearly not an extemporaneous speaker, although
Jesus Christ. I mean, again, how do you say it the first time and then say it again? That suggests to me, I was talking in my about this in my other podcast, and Nooch, I don't know if you know Dan Antonucci, who's the other guy who does that with me, you know, he was saying that he thinks that this was a planned out speech, like he wrote it down and everything, because he's like, coaches are so, you know, rah rah, but this will get him going. I just don't understand it.
I mean, some of the like sort of angry desperation speeches, those do kind of come from a true point of emotion.
I believe he was obviously emotionally compromised.
Yeah.
He wasn't listening to himself.
As someone who used to have to wait around for coaches to do post-game interviews after they'd been in the locker room, they're an emotional mess at that point. And you're walking on eggshells.
It's like, true. These guys are like so competitive. So many of them are megalomaniacal, and they're, you're right, they're in the worst frame of mind of their day.
Yeah. And like the Bo Pelini thing was completely unsurprising to me, actually. Like, not just based on his personality.
How it blew up eventually?
What's that?
How the whole thing blew up?
Well, like that post-game rant that he went on.
Oh, okay.
It was completely unsurprising to me. And I'm not a big Bo guy, obviously. I get called out for that a lot by our listeners that I have it against him. But honestly, that really is, while that may have been a slightly elevated version of things like that,
sure,
it wasn't rare. It's not a surprising thing. And
again, so many of these guys have been given the keys to the kingdom and so rarely checked on any behavior that you get to a point where, you know, you're not considering consequences because there's been none for so long.
And I will say this. I do think we'd be having a different conversation if Tweety were a part of this conversation.
Sure.
Because, like, and also, too, so I don't have a lot. I mean, I have some friends who are Creighton fans, but I don't really talk to them much anymore.
Creighton basketball is a big topic of conversation.
Yeah,
unless
I don't have a lot
there.
I don't have a lot of Creighton basketball conversations. I can imagine that there's probably some like defense of McDermott, like, oh, come on, he's getting in trouble over this. And I think if it were a Nebraska coach, it would be at a very, that argument would be at a very high pitch and volume right now from a lot of Husker fans. I haven't seen a lot of that on social media, and some of that might be because I don't surround myself with Creighton fans, but I think
it's a good example, actually. If I'm, I go finish what you're going to say.
Well, then. Just that, like, I think there are probably a lot of people, especially the same week that Dr. Seuss's trust said, like, hey, we're not.
They did that on their
books.
Own, by the way.
Yeah,
that was their own choice. Nobody forced them into that. So anyone who says that there was a cancellation that went on with that, it was their absolute own choice on their own determination. And the sales went through the roof.
They chose in a free market, yes, to not do that. But in that same week where a lot of people then lost their minds over quote unquote cancel culture. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly Greg McDermott is now suspended and likely not going to be the basketball coach at Creighton all that much longer. I think there are probably a lot of people in the state of Nebraska and elsewhere saying, oh God, wokeism.
It's an opportunity. Wokeism, really, I'm realizing, is simply looking at something from someone else's perspective. And the Dr. Seuss is an excellent example because I read someone say, here's the thing. If you are a black child and you have Dr. Seuss books, the only depiction of black people in Dr. Seuss books is as tribesmen and natives. Mm-hmm. That very kind of antiquated, you know,
Asians
very dark.
As well.
Yes. Yes. So the point is, this is a cultural phenomenon, Dr. Seuss. For white kids, we are most of the characters in those books. If you happen to be a kid who looks different and you look at yourself in one of those books, you are portrayed in a cartoonish, and I know it's a cartoon all overall, but a bit more of a stereotypical negative way. So from that perspective, for that person, to you and I, it doesn't affect. We're not even looking at it that way. In the
and
same way.
We haven't even begun to examine it from the viewpoint of cats.
No, for God's sakes, if my cats saw those books, they'd be tearing me apart. And and for the other situation, it's the same thing. The players on that team said they were hurt by that comment. The word plantation to me, yes, it evokes that thing, but it doesn't evoke the fact that my great, great, great grandparents were on one. And it's very possible for some of those people that that's what it means to them. And that's how it affects them. I could point to the same thing with Texas, where you have old 80-year-old oil billionaires and millionaires who are demanding that literally the great, great grandchildren of slaves sing a song to honor the great, great, great grandchildren of the slave owners. That's one way to look at it. And to me, I have no history with any of that. So I'm looking at it from an outsider. But if you are someone who experienced it in that way, that's what that song means to you. And if you are someone on the side of the boosters who are saying, let them sing that song, what the way of life you're defending, the tradition and everything, is a tradition based on that racism. So if you understand that, it may not mean that to you personally, but all the evidence and the greater meaning of it does point to that. And I think if we're able to, it's like in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy when they have that super weapon where it shoots the ultimate perspective gun or the universal perspective thing.
I'm slowly remembering that. It's been since I was a freshman in high school that I read it.
And in the book, it's the universal perspective, you know, something, and they turn it into a gun in the movie. The point is, it doesn't work on the woman. And she goes, well, I'm already a woman. I can already see things from another person's point of view because she's had to her whole life because it's a man's world, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what I think sometimes we forget, that for people like you and I and Tweety and many others, and that's not to say there isn't poverty in our group either, but we've seen things through that prism because that's the way the whole world is. I just think if people were able to put themselves in that position more and say, they're singing a song that my great, great, great grandfather, you know, would have been in chains having to listen to. I just think that's a different perspective. And I think people would be a little bit more angry if it was their family that was being called into question or whatever it is.
I agree with you. I mean, there is always the risk that, like,
and I'm a free speecher.
Yeah.
Like, say what you want, but understand consequences.
Yeah. Well, and I think there is always the risk too of some of the stuff being purely for performative purposes, and then not going anywhere beyond, you know, like you still have young student athletes, largely from underrepresented populations across the rest of the country. But then, you know, being in many ways exploited, although people will argue that point as well, that, you know, hey, they're getting a scholarship.
Right. That's an outside.
Although again, the scholarship loses a lot of value when you basically are a full-time job as an athlete as well. We're kind of getting into the weeds here.
But it is a question of, are they, it's the same thing with professional athletes. When people say they're so overpaid, you have to look at it. It's like, I don't know why people are so in for management. When CEOs make 60 times as much as the average employee now, and they used to make 10 times a CEO. Now it's like 200-400 times a CEO makes. Like, people, if your company makes $1 billion and 10 people work at the company, one of them shouldn't get most of the $1 billion and everybody gets a salary.
Right.
You know what I mean? So in professional sports teams, when they're like, oh, they get all this money, they're getting a fraction that's negotiated. Jerry Jones, are you happy that Jerry Jones is getting more money, everyone? White or black, nobody can think that's a good guy. You know, he's probably bought babies to have their flesh put onto his face to give himself a new face.
Oh,
probably. That's hearsay.
Big Red Leftist Cast, brought to you by Dollar Shave Club.
It's not leftist. It's humanist.
Joking,
you bastards.
I'm joking because I know that's what we're gonna get.
I'm thinking of going into politics as the Second Amendment Democrat.
Okay.
Like because that's the big issue for so many people, and I've got some really out of the box Second Amendment ideas, which is you go to get your driver's license.
I didn't know.
And you were given the
offer.
Option. You were given the option at that time to get your gun license too. So you got your license, you get your gun, you get your car, everybody's got a gun who can get a license. So there are a few requirements. And then if we all got a gun, look out.
All right.
That's probably not a great idea, but I think it could get me elected. Honestly, worse ideas have gotten people elected.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just real quickly, too. I mean, the other part of it is college athletic programs are large corporations.
They're run like them.
Yes. Large corporations have in recent years taken political stands one way or another because they, like many TV networks or other large corporate entities, recognize that there's a divide, even political campaigns recognize that there's a large value in dividing and conquering and having a clear and passionate fan base.
Passionate.
And if you're Delta and you say, hey, we're very pro LGBTQ, and maybe you upset some anti-LGBTQ people, but you get pro-gay rights.
It's a calculation. Yeah.
Very happy. It is a calculation. If you decide, hey, we want to keep playing this racist song, or hey, we don't want to keep playing this racist song, you're calculating.
Yep. That the money is better than the players you're going to lose.
Where the money and PR are going to be. And like, maybe that's really, really cynical on my part, but that's essentially what it is.
No. There's a guy named David Sampson, and I've had him on my podcast. He used to be the GM of the Marlins, and he runs he does a podcast called Nothing Personal with David Sampson. He ends everyone with "It's just business, nothing personal."
Mm-hmm.
And whatever, he's liberalish, but he's pro management, which is kind of a weird combination.
Very.
It is. But, you know, it's like the political, you know, he's socially liberal and then, you know, wants everyone to be poor except him. But that's the whole point of his podcast. Everything in this business is a calculation. The thing that I think is interesting about Texas is most of their, almost like 90% of their recruits are from Texas. So at that point, it becomes like, what is the high school point of view of that? And I'm sure the culture of football in Texas is much like it was 25 years ago, except the offenses have opened up. But culturally, I think it's probably, you know, Art Briles came out of that system and went to Baylor. And, you know, there's just that Texas football thing. And so I wonder if players there are just so used to it that they'll go to Texas without questioning that.
Yeah.
Or if it's such a thing to go to Texas. But I feel like if you have a Texas scholarship offer, you definitely have a scholarship offer from a school out of state.
Yes.
You know what I mean? If you're
absolutely
big enough to get that.
By the way, I apologize if you heard just a half second of the Big Ten Network.
I didn't.
Okay, good. I was still listening.
Yeah, no.
I my other text chain is my dad and my brother constantly talking Husker stuff. Nebraska got down huge earlier in this basketball game. Yeah, but we're up one with 12.7 seconds left.
Wow.
So we're going to continue this conversation, but I'm also keeping
following
an eye.
That. Well, yes. When the final comes in, tell people. It'll be 2 days after that they'll find
yeah,
out. But
right? Well, depending on when you listen. Yeah. Oh, come on. That's a travel. You're getting bonus footage here, guys. Oh,
that's
great.
I can see
out
it through your glasses.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. So I think I'm about done with my point, but it's a little bit crazy to me that they won't suffer a little bit more for this. And maybe we'll see. Maybe we'll find out coming down the line how it affects their recruiting. But in the same way, like if you got a state, I'm sorry. If you have a state and you have college kids coming in and your state is not going to legalize weed, that's another disadvantage you're putting yourself at.
Well, there are a couple things there.
You could say the NCAA can make it
it is still banned. Illegal substance in the NCAA, so that's its own set of challenges. But it is interesting. Like I don't mean to just go ahead and pull us into the next topic, but
do it.
But Grant, our frequent guest, who you know is
Wistrom Wednesday, Grant Wistrom.
Who is involved?
Nebraska great.
Yes, in some cannabis operations. He's going to be speaking at the Capitol soon. I
On behalf of legalization.
Yes, he had a he had an op-ed that was penned. It was like penned by six people. His name was on it, sure. In the Lincoln Journal Star, basically saying that Ricketts is the embodiment. Pete Ricketts, the governor, is the embodiment of like the movie Reefer Madness.
Yes, you could also say evil if you wanted to be a little more general. he is. You know, why would you want a billionaire kid? Third generation billionaire kid running your state. He's done nothing to earn that. He bought that election. And so if you're in favor of him, he doesn't care. He does not care. A billionaire Ricketts doesn't give a shit about one citizen in Nebraska. I guarantee you, any more than any of the Ricketts who own the Cubs care about one Cub game. Like you were saying before, they care about money. Ricketts is tied in with pharmaceuticals and probably tobacco and probably alcohol and has plenty of people in his pocket.
To be clear, I didn't say any of that.
I'm saying all this, all on me. Joe Canale, put my name after all of it. The Ricketts family are evil. Print it.
Kobe Webster got a pretty good look at the buzzer, and it didn't go. I mean, it was a long three. But yeah, we lost by one basically because we didn't box out.
Got to box out, kids.
Damn it.
And Grant is more eloquent than Ricketts. Put those two up in a debate and Grant will smash him.
I don't want to tip into like my day job too much here.
Sure.
Because I try and keep the two pretty separate, but like I do have to transcribe a lot of Pete Ricketts press conferences. That dude talks a mile a minute.
Probably to get you to not hear a lot of what he's saying. Now, so do I, but.
But I reached out to Grant this week and he said he would come and talk to us again. I didn't follow back up. I want to know his thoughts on this, but I also don't want to put him in an uncomfortable position either that like, he clearly loves and respects his former coach, Tom Osborne, who
yes.
is a part of that political bent and campaign. Not as much lately. He hasn't been an active face of it, but like that's very, very, very against marijuana in all forms, whether it be recreational or medical. And I just would love to know, because I don't think we've ever asked this question of him, even though we've talked a lot about the medical cannabis thing with him, is like, and people can disagree and obviously still have a lot of love and respect for each other, but I am genuinely curious what that sort of dynamic is like with
how he,
him and Osborne being so diametrically opposed.
Well, think of Bill Walton speaks about John Wooden as if he, you know, as if it was God. I've never heard, you know, Bill, other than the Grateful Dead, he doesn't compliment anything as much as John Wooden. Actually, Wooden gets more. And Bill Walton was an acid taking hippie at the time, getting arrested in the street for protesting wars. And Wooden was a square, but they got along beautifully. And I suspect because here's the thing, I disagree with Osborne. And I disagree with Ricketts, but Ricketts is a complete cynic and has no belief in what he's saying. I believe Osborne, though he is I believe he's like off in his thinking, has a rationale, has a thought process, has a philosophy, and can sit there and defend what he thinks about. Ricketts is a shill for whoever's paying him and is a standard politician piece of shit. Republican or Democrat, that's what most of them are. I think Osborne actually had some integrity. And I think because of that, if you believe that the person has, you know, I think we've gone so deep generally with like conspiracy theories and all this crazy shit. But, you know, it wasn't so long ago. Now, I'm of the belief that the Republicans have always had this agenda as is racist, anti-woman, pro-man, pro big business, anti most people. That's the way I view the GOP over the last 30 years since Reagan, the most overrated president in history.
Winning over half of our audience right now.
I don't care. You know what he did? He got rid of the, he got rid of having to put both sides on the news. And he brought forth CNN. He brought forth Fox News. He got rid of the actual law that said you have to do news on the news. So Reagan's a piece of shit, complete and total. He's in hell right now. I'm more convinced of that than most people. Now, beyond that, Osborne, back to Osborne, is a man of his beliefs. He's not a politician. It's probably why he didn't win when he ran, because he's a man of beliefs and he's going to stick with those beliefs no matter what they be. And most politicians are complete like versions of Ted Cruz. And if you like Ted Cruz, I don't care who you are, you're a fucking idiot. No one hates his constituents more than that guy.
I will say this. So Dave,
and that's Heineman, where Tweety's moving.
Dave Heineman, the guy who beat Tom Osborne in the gubernatorial primary when he ran, I covered that campaign like as as a small town radio guy. Like I wasn't I wasn't following both campaigns to like to campaign sites, but I talked to both of those guys, and Dave Heineman ran a very, very, very good campaign, but it wasn't a dirty one either. But he knew
you can't run a dirty campaign against Osborne.
Well, he knew how to spin Osborne's strengths into weaknesses, basically saying, you know, like even though Osborne was a smart guy and he'd already served in the House, like he had some political acumen.
Too set in his ways.
But that, like,
was that the
Heineman basically spun it as that, like just subtly, like that he's a football coach, and but didn't hit it hard. But then also, Heineman took over for I believe it was Johans, who you know got appointed in Washington in an agricultural role, and so he then was an incumbent and basically said, hey, you know, we're both smart people. We both know what we're doing, but I've been in this role now for a little while. I know
my change at How did Ricketts win? Who did Ricketts run against? Do the Ricketts have a connection to Nebraska, or did he just move there to become governor?
Well,
I mean, this is like a Mitt Romney thing.
Pete Ricketts was born in Nebraska City and went to, I believe, West Side in Omaha for high school.
Wow. I didn't know that about the Ricketts's.
Yeah. TD Ameritrade started in Omaha. Like
Omaha?
They're Nebraskans, but one of his key, and I need to be real careful about talking about this for
sure.
But like one of his key potential opponents had to drop out due to family health situation in the primary. That was shaping up to the former speaker of the Nebraska legislature. That was shaping up to be a pretty good race. Once that happened,
they got so much money.
And then in any statewide Nebraska race, and this wasn't the case even probably 20 years ago, any statewide race, once it gets to the Republican versus Democrat portion of it, it's a lock. Like
yes,
there are a lot of people in Nebraska who either rightly or wrongly and for varying reasons dislike Ben Sasse, but dude won by like 50% in the Senate.
I just wish he had a little more wherewithal. I think his future would be a little better off if he had a little more balls and would kind of stick to what he starts doing. He complains. I'm dealing mostly with him in the last president, but then he folds.
Yeah.
Complains, folds. Power is an awful thing because there's clearly no interest in our government in the citizens' well-being. Just taking so long on some of these bills, like it's, you know, and then Manchin holds out so we all get $100 less a week. What does West Virginia get for that? It's just they hate their constituents. When the laws they try to pass, if the Republicans were in power, we'd have no relief for anybody. Keep that in mind. So when the people you elect hate you, stop voting for them. That's just simple solutions there. And I know most of them hate us, so it makes it hard who to vote for. Just try to go for the one who hates you least.
I'm going to really
this
try.
This has been a very political episode.
I'm going to try and pull us away.
Pull us away. Get us out of
here. Because honestly,
get us away from this. We've done enough.
Where a person stands on politics, I think everyone's just exhausted and doesn't want to talk about
they are.
Any of that.
But that's a problem. That's part of their theory, too, to tire you out so you don't care. And then they pull the real shit over your eyes. So I'm going to stay angry just to keep reminding people.
Joe.
You're right. You're right. Let's move on. We got to recruit.
Did. An in-state kid, too.
Okay.
I like this kid, Ernest.
Very
Houseman,
important.
Columbus.
Looks like a good inside linebacker, potentially. Reminds me a little bit of Randolph Kapai, except he's shorter.
I was just going to say that, like, where he could play inside or outside. And his sophomore year, he played wide receiver and cornerback. And then this past year as a junior, he became a linebacker.
That's what you want. You want defensive backs turned into linebackers.
Yeah. That's what a guy like Ed Stewart was on those mid-90s Husker teams.
Yep.
That you want those guys. And those are
absolutely.
You
get, you know, if you get that guy from South Dakota, Randolph
Kapai.
I don't know that he'll play his freshman year, but you put some Kapai. It's a good Kapow. You put some weight on that guy. You know, he has the potential to have Neil Smith type body at some point. I don't know if he'll ever get that big, but he's tall.
He's a guy too who I think has the frame, but hasn't had the nutrition to be able
the structure.
To, to be able to do that. Like he might be a guy who could get big quickly.
Yep.
But
yeah,
and then Houseman. We were the first team to offer him, and then, bam, everybody came in.
Yep.
And, you know,
were
I mean,
we the first team to offer the other?
What's that?
Keep going. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. We've got a slight delay today.
Were we the first to offer the two guys who kept us out of their top five out of Omaha? Were we early on them, or did we have an inkling that?
I mean, those were pretty highly rated kids from the outset. So you're talking Avante Dickerson and
the two guys who recently put out their top five.
Gotcha.
In
the
Omaha.
Juniors, the ones.
Yes.
The one from Central and the one from Burke. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure if we weren't the first, we were pretty close. Like that was just a case again where they were highly rated kids. And so like it all happened pretty quickly. Houseman was like just kind of a dark horse. No one knew about him until Nebraska came in and offered like on a national scale,
that hasn't had many Nebraska offers in the past. The high school where he went.
It's a class A school, but not like one of the bigger ones, Columbus, which by the way,
right.
That school is fascinating and interesting. The Columbus Discoverers, pretty solid name. Steeped in a guy, if not tied to a guy with with a problematic history, but Discoverers,
absolutely.
Cool name. And then,
I agree, unique.
And you know, like so many high school fight songs are like just different words to like an existing fight song.
Hail to the Discoverers, whatever it may be.
But Columbus, and I think that this is still, it was for a long, 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 long time. It is to the tune of another song, but it's to the tune of Jesus Christ Superstar.
Columbus High Discoverers, we are gonna be coverers of the spread. So bet on us.
My dad, who has reffed a lot of basketball in the day, loved reffing Columbus games. Like when the team would come out to that
song,
he absolutely digs it.
You know, it's a good song.
Yeah. Did you watch the John Legend version of it?
I don't think so. I think it's rare that I hear any music pre 1980.
I've got
a real old school kind of taste.
That's fine. Nothing wrong with that. I was listening to
if Steely Dan came back and did a cover of it, I'd be into it. Yellow, Electric Light Orchestra.
This morning, yeah.
That'll get you up. Good Sunday morning music.
Yeah. I still think Boogie Nights is the best use of their music.
Boogie Nights has a great soundtrack.
Oh my God. Just my favorite
great soundtrack
is Paul Thomas Anderson really wanted to use Living Thing for that movie, but because of the subject matter, like, there were some people, especially following the movie Showgirls, who were really, really, really afraid of being near that movie. And so, but he wanted to ask Jeff Lynne if he could use that music, but he had to ask for his permission. So he was a little scared. So he brought him to a private screening in a theater, and Paul Thomas Anderson was just watching the back of Jeff Lynne's head for the entire movie and couldn't gauge like what his emotional reaction to it was. And then at the very end of the movie, Living Thing comes on and Jeff Lynne just throws his fists in the air triumphantly.
Oh, that's great.
Paul Thomas Anderson's like, yes.
Yeah. Cause Jeff Lynne has a big afro, so you can't really get any expression even in the movement of his head probably gets hidden in that afro a little bit.
I would give anything to watch ELO live. Like,
really?
Yeah, you know, I'm sorry to our listeners, but you know, fellow comedian Benny Arthur, right?
I think vaguely, yeah.
He got to see ELO like one of the last times they were most recently touring at the Hollywood Bowl, and I was like,
Fleetwood Mac's one of their last full original lineup performances. A few years ago, they were going to do another tour, and right before the tour started, the band got into another fight, and Lindsey Buckingham quit again.
But like
they've had so many tours.
They're not.
You're right.
Still reunite
until somebody dies. It's always possible.
Yeah,
that's true. Not a lot of bands from that era that can really say that. So yes, we got to commit, and I think it's important to get a Nebraska commit too, because it seems like those top two guys are already out. And Caden Helms just got an offer from LSU. Now, LSU is going to be getting some form of the death penalty pretty soon, I think. And Les Miles is going to lose his job, too, which actually may help for State of Kansas recruiting, because I know we're in on a couple of their top players as well. So,
except Kleeman is doing a pretty good job over there at K-State.
He may benefit from Les Miles, function as well,
and but Missouri as well.
Even though he gave us his son for a couple of years, Les Miles might be helping us out even more this year with just ruining two schools' recruiting classes.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and say, fucking up recruiting for Kansas,
not a big deal.
Will do us a lot more good than giving us.
And Miles,
a little used fullback.
Yeah, I agree. And again, that just goes to show no national title comes without some sacrifice in your morality.
God.
So you just can only wonder what Clemson and Alabama have behind the scenes there.
I don't mean to generalize, but I don't think you hit the Bible stuff as hard as Dabo unless you're trying to compensate for something.
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
That's just my general take on it.
The only evidence that you can cite is all evidence of that behavior in history.
Yeah. I mean, Dabo just strikes me as the Joel Osteen of college football coaches.
Yep. Yep. That's an excellent comparison, because both are very successful. Both have a lot of fans, and both are completely full of shit and richer than you'll ever be.
He's going to start selling
thanks to that bullshit. Yes.
He's going to start selling the Dabo Sweeney inspiration cube.
Yep. Yep.
Have you ever seen that thing with Joel Osteen?
No, but I can imagine.
There's a thing.
It's a Rubik's cube. That's like
$100. It's a battery operated thing. You just press a button and it's like your daily inspiration from Joel Osteen.
Well,
like a pre-recorded message.
You know, The religion has long been for sale, so let's not get me into another diatribe.
No,
instead, politics and religion was most of this episode, so no one's going to listen.
Well, we got to take advantage of while Tweety's gone.
Yeah,
talking Husker baseball.
Yes, and why? Well, and why shouldn't we right now? Because we just got lost the first game, and then came back and won the next three.
Yeah, and that's, you know, against a solid Purdue squad. I mean, taking three out of four is never a bad thing. You do that in every series, and you're
set. That's a 750 win percentage. You're in the World Series with that.
Yeah,
even in college baseball, where some teams sometimes have very high win percentages.
Yeah, I mean, Will Bolt feels like he's been there forever, and he finally gets to coach games now.
Yes, you're right. Because there was a whole season canceled last year.
Yeah, there was no College World Series, no nothing. I think we played a couple one or two early season games.
That's right, right.
Yeah, and
so it's really a lot of roster turnover when you think of from what he came in with.
Yeah, I mean, he's recruited so much better than Erstad. It's just unreal. It's unreal the amount of high school baseball talent there is in Nebraska and how much of it has left this state.
Mm.
Like, dude,
is it that, like, they think that baseball doesn't matter in Nebraska? Is it that kind of, you know, the popularity of football ends up killing their baseball prospects?
Do you think, like, baseball prospects leave the home state of Nebraska because they think that the fan base cares about baseball? Like,
okay. I'm just asking, not saying.
No, you're good. Haymarket Field, especially when Nebraska is good, is buzzing. That's a place that people love to go, especially on a weekend like now, where, I mean, it's a little gusty today, but like where it's in the 60s, it's a nice spring day, and there won't be any home games for a while, but like, I mean, not that there usually are this time of year anyway, but like people love to sit on that grassy berm and I'd say Nebraska, when it comes to excitement for their college baseball program, they're in that upper tier with like the LSUs of the world.
Oh.
And honestly, LSU's excitement, the excitement for LSU's program is, it has the state of Nebraska to thank for a lot of that, because, you know, people really like the LSU fan base and Omaha, they took to each other so well and really helped.
There's been a relationship between
for each other.
Louisiana and Nebraska. There's been some connection over the years. And I don't know exactly, you know, we've got some good Louisiana players over the years. I know we've played them in a few bowl games. They were, for a long time, they were kind of my second team because I love their helmets so much. And Tennessee, if they were ever good, might move back into that. But God, you said it last week. They are the Nebraska of the SEC.
Yeah.
Except we, like, have a little more history.
They're a poor man's Nebraska at that.
Yes.
But no, like LSU, because they were in the College World Series every year for a while, it seemed.
Yeah.
And then they had this guy named Dinger.
Now, what a great name for a player of baseball.
Well, he was a fan. He was an old dude. He and his family, and then a bunch of LSU fans would come up every year, and then they came up every year whether LSU was playing or not, and they would park their RVs beyond the outfield, and they dubbed it Dingerville. And they would just be there, like they came to watch LSU, loved it, started coming,
and just came to watch the World Series.
Yeah. And then, like, the very first time I went to the College World Series, we saw LSU and Florida play for the right to go in the national championship game. It was the year that Warren Morris hit the walk-off home run against Miami, like mid-90s, to win the College World Series. We sat either right behind or right in front of Dinger and his wife, and she was just feeding us Werther's Originals throughout the entire game.
Werther's Originals. You got four cavities just in that game. Those are so good where there's originals. I love those things. So if you hit a dinger, it's actually bad in that instance.
Yeah. But like that relationship really, really, I think, formed a bond between those two entities.
Interesting. Yeah. Their super fan became a super fan of Omaha.
And then like it was shortly after that, like Nebraska was a terrible baseball program and they were playing like Buck Belzer Field, which was like just a concrete slab basically. But then Dave Van Horn comes in from a junior college in Louisiana.
Okay.
And I believe that's where he came from. I gotta double check that now. But so he comes in mid 90s shortly after that. And Nebraska suddenly becomes viable. And the people who had started to really fall in love with college baseball had a hometown team. And people just loved the Huskers in everything.
Was that the team with Gordon and Jabba that went to the World Series?
No, that was a little later. Okay. That was eventually with Mike Anderson when Nebraska ultimately made the wrong hire when Dave Van Horn left for his alma mater to go coach at Arkansas. They had two assistant coaches. Mike Anderson, the hitting coach, who had been there as an assistant prior to Dave Van Horn, but stayed on. And then suddenly I can't think of Rob Childress, the pitching coach, who is just a wizard.
Is he in the majors now, Childress?
No, or he's at Texas A&M.
A&M. Okay. I heard his name.
And doing great there too.
Yeah.
But they went ahead and hired Anderson.
Always pitching. Stay with pitching.
They hired Anderson, kept on Childress as the pitching coach, and he did that for a little while, but then eventually was like, all right, I'm bouncing to A&M.
Yeah.
And you know,
he's their head coach now or pitching coach now?
He's their head coach.
Yeah.
And has taken them to the College World Series multiple times, has been a phenomenal coach. And
Boy, you hate when that situation happens. And it's like, it's kind of like Miami with Drew Brees and Dante Culpepper.
Yeah. It's my brother's a Dolphins fan. He's familiar with that.
The Dolphins should trade for Watson, but that's off topic. There was another thing I thought we had on the list. Tweedy moving to Texas, most probably because he loves his cowboy boots.
Yeah. Do you think it's a midlife crisis?
I probably think it's more like a 8/10 life crisis. I think it's a 3/4 life crisis. He's only got about 10 more years.
He's lived pretty hard.
He can get steroids easier in Texas, I'm guessing.
He gets to go now wear cowboy boots and eat a lot of meat. And
he can be the liberal one for a while.
He can show everyone how tough he is by not wearing a mask at a CrossFit gym.
but do they have CrossFit in Texas?
Oh,
or is it like, you know,
I mean, a lot of Texas is actually, I mean, if they go to Austin
is as liberal as a lot of California.
Yeah.
And Dallas is a cool town. I haven't ever been to Houston. I've been to Dallas a lot and I've been to Austin a number of times too.
I don't think I've ever been to Dallas other than through the airport.
It's, you know, it's a city. I haven't spent enough time getting into the culture there. I know they have museums in Fort Worth, actually. They have a really nice museum. But Dallas is a big metropolitan city, and, you know, they got all the sports teams. And
Houston, like, very spread out. Like,
yeah, and just the weather of Houston, the mugginess, the potential of hurricanes and the flooding. It's not necessarily a place I'd want to live. Austin be all right. I've said this a number of times. Texas has no natural sources of fresh water other than the Gulf, which nobody wants to drink that. So if they ever tried to secede, which I think is a possibility in the next 10 to 15 years, you just build some dams up on the border and see you later, Texas.
Did I ever tell you I almost took a job in Corpus Christi when I was still working in college sports?
What's that? Texas Tech?
Texas A&M Corpus Christi.
Oh, all right.
The Islanders.
Now, where is Corpus Christi in the state?
Sort of by the Gulf, I believe.
Okay, but more like a western state. Houston's east, right?
But it's, I believe Corpus Christi is pretty Eastern. I don't know. I didn't do a lot of research. I eventually took my name out of the running.
Good move.
But because I don't know. I don't even remember why. That was like,
you probably didn't want to move to Corpus Christi.
Yeah. It looks like a cooler city than people. It's got a Double-A baseball team. Like,
anymore though? Major League Baseball redid their whole minors. I don't know if Corpus Christi kept it.
They cut a lot of teams,
but most of it was A League. Most Double-A teams stayed where they were.
Yeah, but then like there were teams though that were moved from Triple-A to A.
Yeah, there was a lot of shifting. I'm happy because there's a team about 4 miles. There's the Hudson Valley Renegades, maybe, but I think a raccoon.
Sounded like you were going to say raccoons.
I was, because I think a raccoon is their mascot, but they're the Renegades. The Yankees A-ball team just moved up there. It was like Tampa Bay or whatever, but that's a much better idea in upstate New York to have a Yankees minor league team. Now, again, my father, who's gotten the vaccine, both doses,
nice,
will still never go to one of their games, and it's 4 miles away. Like, I feel like his doses were wasted on someone who will never leave the house and has virtually no possibility of getting it.
Is it because he
barely left the house before?
I was going to say, was it COVID purposes or like recluse purposes?
Recluse purposes. He would occasionally work out, but now he just does his Nordic track that's been in the dining room for 35 years. And he goes to church. That's it. He might go to church again, but that's the only difference.
Okay. By the way, Corpus Christi, pretty far southeast.
Okay, southeast. By Louisiana, maybe even.
Like further down the Gulf.
Okay, got it. Yep. Wow, way down there, huh? Down in the tip?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a kidney stone that Corpus or that Texas is about to pass out that little.
I understand.
Yeah, we went a while today.
We did. Did we miss anything? Basketball game. We got the score of that. We're going to be. I think we play Northwestern again in the tournament.
Probably
the Big Ten tournament.
One of those play-in things.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
Before the double bye, right? We're playing for next year. It's a long game with Hoiberg here.
Yeah,
it's clear he ain't getting any NBA offers after this season.
I wish Kobe Webster could go out on a little better note because he's played really well.
Oh,
as a
Kobe,
grad transfer.
Yeah, I was thinking of Allen. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, also we had a Kobe King who transferred in from Wisconsin. Who never made it to the season.
No.
But with two McGowanses next year, hopefully some improved post players.
Do you think Thor and their other senior are going to stay?
Well, Derek Walker has for sure said that he's going to stay. He's okay. Like a redshirt junior, but like could leave if he wanted, obviously. He had to sit for a season and a half due to NCAA stuff. And
Jesus.
And the team, unfortunately, the season was a loss at that point, so it was hard to really kind of get much momentum at that point. But the team looked better with him there. And then Eduardo Andre, another post player, a young kid from London, who's pretty raw, he got hit with COVID right out of the gate. And so he didn't get to practice a whole lot. And then he also was like working on getting his lungs back, too.
Sure.
But he looks like he could be really good. I mean, if we could somehow tap the potential of Ivan Wedraogo, the French guy. If we could somehow
maximize, that's what the offseason is for, I guess.
His potential, like, there's a lot that could be liked about this team. I would love to get Thor back just because I think he's a nice X factor guy. Now, I mean, ideally, he's a 6th, 7th, 8th guy off the bench,
right,
and a guy on an NCAA tournament team. And he might just decide, I've been in school a while, I've been on some bad teams, I'm going to go make some money playing basketball in Scandinavia.
Yeah, true. And if he's graduated already, probably.
And honestly, like, the conditions seem pretty good in Iceland. Like,
hell yeah.
it might just be he might decide that's the route, and I wouldn't blame the kid at all.
Shit, man, if I could be a professional basketball player in Iceland, I would have done it. Should I have looked into that? I can dribble with both hands.
I've seen, like, there's a guy from, like, when I was broadcasting Wayne State, he was from England, but he was playing Division II. He wasn't even a starter on the Division II team. I mean, but that to say that, like, if you're a scholarship guy on a college basketball team, yes, there are only so many scholarships to go around. You're a pretty good basketball player.
Absolutely.
Like, so I, like, it's so easy to write off, like, Division II kids is like, well, that dude sucks. I could probably dunk on him. No, you couldn't. No.
I used to play with Jason Sudeikis, who was he's the guy on Ted Lasso, but we used to play in Chicago, and he was the best player amongst all of us who would play.
He was a good high school basketball player.
Yes, but he just played like JUCO, not like even, I don't think it was even a scholarship for JUCO. He played on a JUCO team, but it wasn't like,
there's some good basketball in JUCO.
Well, yeah, and he just could can threes constantly. Like, nobody could, he could get a three-pointer whenever he wanted it. And it was one of those things where he was, you know, it's not like he was so great, but he was better than all of us. And so probably didn't even play as hard as he could just to keep, you know, because otherwise it's not as much fun.
Yeah. But to my point, though, the backup Division II guy who barely played, he's carved out a nice little professional career in England.
Right. And that guy is levels better than Sudeikis, who was levels better than a lot of the people who, you know, like, you forget, like, oh, this guy's the best player playing. Yeah. And on a D2 team, he would be you, the guy who's not that good. You know,
my brother who played D2 football said, you know, the hardest thing with college sports, the hardest adjustment for virtually every guy is you were the best guy on your team. That's why you're playing college sports, and you come in and you are not.
Only one of the 13 or 15 people will continue the I'm the best guy in the team thing.
Like,
or in a football team, 50.
Yeah, it's there was a guy on my brother's team. It was not my brother, but who, like, just broke down one day in practice. Like, a kid, just a big tough kid from Miami, who, like, it's just a lot, like, these kids come up from, like, all over the place to different locations, and then suddenly, like, you're not the guy.
Going to college away from home is scary without having a social adjustment from king to pauper.
Right. I think people just take that for granted. And like, when people, like, when we're leaving the program right and left this summer and fall, like, I think, like, people just completely underestimated, like, in the best of times, bringing a bunch of dudes up from Miami to this situation is already a challenge, but to do it in COVID times,
you've taken all the positives away. You've taken the crowd, the game day, the adulation of being a star on the team on campus. That's all gone.
The social life, everything.
You're staying in your room in a wintry, you know, totally different climate. Absolutely. And at that point,
some of them didn't know whether or not there was going to be a season. Like, there was nothing.
There is huge, in sports and in everything, there is a huge lack of empathy.
Yeah.
And we judge, and people get on these, you know, on the Instagram or on the Twitter of these kids and say stuff. It only takes 2 seconds to say, God, I'm a 19-year-old moving 2,000 miles away from home who doesn't get any of the stuff I was promised because of this pandemic, and only am getting the bad parts of college. Like, nobody's going to love that.
No.
But we judge as if it's like, hey, you're here to, you know, entertain me.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway. There we
empathy,
are.
People. Empathy. I'm screaming at you to have empathy. It's a weird thing to do, to be yelled at by someone asking you to have empathy. But that's me.
Well, yeah.
And if Tweety was here, we'd have somebody yelling to not have empathy.
Well, maybe next week.
Maybe next week. Let's look forward to it.
I wonder if he's listened to any of this. I highly doubt it.
This one, if you put, you know, I don't know what you're going to say for the title of this episode, but it might draw in some people and it might keep others away. Do it. It's up to you.
We'll see.
You're the guy. You're the newsman. You're the headline writer.
Oh, boy.
Hopefully we'll have some more recruits next week. This will start a big, big rush.
Yeah. And honestly, apparently was no shortage of content this week. This is one of our longest episodes in a while.
I also want to say one last thing. I saw something, and this was maybe a little Easter egg on the Rivals page. It said there was a picture, you know, this guy signed, right?
And under the picture, committed.
Committed. And it says, it's the first known commit. And those guys are always like, you know, they have a little inside stuff. And yes, they put it that way. But I just saw it like, there's no reason you had to write the first known commit.
I mean, unless you're just really covering your bases from like a news standpoint, same reason that you say like this person allegedly stole this, because, you know, you gotta, you know, you think of those things a lot when you're constantly writing things, especially when there can be something that sneaks up and surprises you. And you know that there are sometimes silent commits. I don't know if I'm reading anything into it, but hey, you know,
You can hope. I have no idea who it would be, but
I don't either. I was going to make up a fake name, but then I was
maybe
like,
Caden Helms, only because I know that's a name.
Okay. Here we go. Follow us on Twitter at Big Red Cobcast. We're on Facebook.com/Cobcast. Go to Patreon.com/Big Red Cobcast and throw a few bucks in there, even if it won't be until next week that we start putting videos back up again.
But then there'll be a slew of them.
Maybe. Take us out, Joe.
Fatty rides a bus.
Fatty rides a bus.
This has been a Boardwalk Audio podcast. For more information and shows, visit boardwalkaudio.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe now.
The Sea of Red, Husker Nation.
See what makes Nebraska fans the greatest fans in college football with a new movie directed by Lincoln native Ryan Tweedy.
Through These Gates.
The perfect gift for Husker fans.
Available on DVD now at huskerfilm.com.